Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. Tom, I don't like to see 25 degrees. That's in the forecast. I mean, come on. I've started covering the plants, but, you know, a week being covered, maybe even longer. When it hits 25, I worry a little bit about the plants.
But you still might have something going as far as renting ice skates to the birds.
There you go. You're talking about a hard freeze on the bird bath. So the Buckmaster Index of freeze. Yesterday we had a bird bath freeze, not this morning. So we'll see how it goes today. It's the Buckmaster Show Friday. It's the 20th of January, 2023. We are in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Tucson Broadcast Complex, where we have four radio stations under one roof. Our radio station is 1030. KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's source for trusted news and talk. We're still celebrating, still in the celebratory mood as we start our 13th year on the radio and then our 35th on TV and radio here in Tucson. Worldwide live listening, podcasts, and show archive. Pretty much every show we have done over the last 12 years at buckmastershow.com. Very easy to archive. On any program, pretty much, with a few exceptions. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, when we do our telephone interviews, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Friday is our media shout-out day, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan Smith, the editor and publisher, is with me in studio, so I can tell him eye to eye. Thank you, Dylan, for your support.
And back at you for all these years. And it's really amazing to see you keep plugging away and doing this important work.
Showing up.
Holding some of these politicians accountable.
There you go. Show up for work every day. That's the Buckmaster motto. And Dylan, as you know, I started the radio show. I think you started about a year earlier with TucsonSentinel.com.
Indeed. I think we're coming up on
In year 14, probably.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm a journalist. I can't do math.
I know. Tucson Local Media, we thank them. Their portfolio of publications includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. And, of course, we thank Dan Scheer and his team at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun for their support over the years. Our Friday Focus interview today, Tucson City Councilwoman Nikki Lee, a Democrat representing Ward Number 4, Air Force veteran who worked in cyber technology and security field that was within the defense industry. Nikki worked in that for a couple of decades, about 20 years. Then a couple of years recently working in the agriculture industry in her latest exciting venture, currently working at Arbinger Institute, where she is focusing on state and local governments and supporting those governments with cultural transformation. Councilwoman, how are you?
Bill, it's great to be here with you and Dylan today. Thank you so much for the invitation, and I am doing very well.
Are you excited about this new job with Arbinger?
I am.
How would you explain it? Simply put.
We help organizations achieve their objectives by addressing some of the cultural challenges that they're experiencing.
Which include?
You know, a lot of organizations, including us at the City of Tucson, have challenges with recruitment, retention, efficiencies, just communication, collaboration, because at the end of the day, we're all people and we're showing up to do work together. And sometimes things come up that prevent us from being able to achieve those objectives. So we work on resolving those and helping our clients do that.
City of Tucson facing huge challenges. I'll name a couple. The obvious ones, I would put water up there. Obviously, the homeless situation. We've got the police staffing issues. Why don't we begin with the big one, the water? Are we okay? Despite the cutbacks on the Colorado River, are we okay in the city of Tucson?
Yeah, Bill, that's a great place to start. I know that that's an issue that keeps a lot of us awake at night, just thinking about the future of how folks are going to be able to sustain life and live here out in Tucson and in these desert environments for the future. So I know that we have done a lot of great work just as a community over the past several decades with being focused on water conservation, banking water, and really building out the infrastructure and the supply to make sure we can meet the demand when this day would come. And unfortunately, you know, we're here, we're facing additional announcements on tier shortages into the next year. So we have a lot of work to do to really continue to refine what we're doing around sustainability, try to get our ideas out there to other jurisdictions, especially California, about how we can all focus on more conservation and additional, you know, water supply. And I know that's what the board of folks is looking at with DSAL and whatnot, just to make sure we're positioning ourselves for success in the future.
You and your colleagues signed on along with 8 other Arizona cities and water districts last November. It was kind of a memo about sustainability, and I looked it up to see what were some of the ideas and suggestions. Get rid of ornamental grass. That some people are doing it, and you know, we're seeing some of that. Recycle more wastewater. That's happening. Make indoor and outdoor watering more efficient. Limit outdoor watering to a few days a week. Kind of been doing that in Tucson, haven't we, for decades with, what was it called, Dylan? Beat the peak. Yeah. So, and minimizing business use of thirsty swamp coolers. I'm not sure how many people and businesses still use them, but I've heard maybe 10 to 15% of residents in Tucson still have them. But generally, are we kind of doing what we should on conservation?
Yeah, as you laid out, Bill, there are so many different things that we can look at. And some of them might sound small, like you said, if it's only 10 or 15%, but all of those things add up, right? So Councilmember Dahl and Councilmember Vice Mayor Kozacik have done a really great job of pushing those pieces forward. For example, Councilmember Dahl brought forward the concept of requiring businesses with ornamental turf mm-hmm. to remove that. And I want to be specific. It's not turf like in an apartment complex that people or pets use. It's mm-hmm. maybe something in a median somewhere that we're just watering for mm-hmm. really cosmetic reasons. Mm-hmm. So we are moving those things forward in terms of policy to just continue to chip away at any excess water usage that really isn't functional, because that's the game that we have to play right now.
All right, let's bring in my friend Dylan Smith. Dylan?
So to clarify, ornamental turf would be grass that nobody ever walks on, sits
not
on,
exactly.
They don't play
we're not
on
talking
it.
AstroTurf.
It's just there because it looks nice and green.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. We've been told, you know, for several years now, if we've been asking city officials and members of the council, you know, are we in a crisis about water? And for all this time, it's been kind of downplayed, you know, don't worry about it. There's really nothing that has to change. We've been doing a great job. And indeed, you know, we do use less water now than we did 30 years ago. There are only so many more steps we can take, but it seems like we're right at the edge of actually having water cutbacks where the city will be getting less water. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always a fine line where you don't want to cause people to panic and be overly concerned, but everyone has to be aware and everyone has to do what they can do to make cutbacks. And for longer term, like I'm thinking about my kids and my kids' kids and their futures here in this environment and with climate change and drought and uncertainty, we have to position ourselves. We have to be taking all of this on with a big sense of urgency collectively so that we don't have to worry about what's not going to come out of our faucets down into the future.
Like what has happened up in the name of that community?
Buckeye?
Saddle something?
No. Oh, okay.
There's right outside Scottsdale.
There's two.
The development that had their water cut off because the city no longer wants to deliver
there's
it to
two
them.
Issues here. Yeah. There's this development that was very close to Scottsdale, and Scottsdale was supplying them the water. Scottsdale says, no longer. We just can't truck this water into you any longer. Then there's the issue in Buckeye, suburb of Phoenix, where the state water director has said, you know, you are not this development. Specifically, saying to the developers, you are not meeting the assured water supply.
The 100 years.
There you go. So what's happening is this is now the forefront issue, this whole sustainability issue.
It is. And it's here in Tucson. It's all over the world. I was reading that, like, I don't know the exact quote, so I'm not going to say it, but 2050, we're going to be in a pickle across the globe with people not having enough access to fresh water resources. So this is something that, you know, I know there's questions about desalination and environmental consequences and all those things. And those are very real to consider. And I'm hoping that technology and our innovators continue to innovate around this space to continue to provide options, because this is something we're going to be experiencing here in Tucson, across the Southwest, and across the planet.
Dylan, you brought up the word crisis. And actually, you could say there are, some would say, three crises that are going on in the crises. plural of crisis. You've got the water. You've got, some would say, the homelessness is a crisis. And then there would be the law enforcement piece trying to recruit enough cops on the street. Do you want to tackle one of those next? You want to start with, let's start with homelessness.
Yeah. That is by far the biggest, most complex challenge that I've ever dealt with in my old or young, I don't know, depending if you talk to my kids, but my 40-year-old existence, this is incredibly complex. And this is really hard to figure out, right? Because there are so many different variables. And I had a really good call with my sister-in-law this morning, who works with Old Pueblo Community Services. And she and I go on outreach together on Wednesday mornings from time to time. And, you know, even this morning, she reminded me that everyone has the intention of fixing everything in a big swoop. But in reality, every day it's about one or two, three or four people that we can actually help. And that's hard. That's hard to acknowledge, right? Because the problem is so big. It's so vast. It's in every corner of the city. And all of us at the city, the county, the state, all of our nonprofit partners, neighbors, everyone wants the same thing. You know, they want people to be taken care of, people who are experiencing homelessness, the businesses who are experiencing challenges from crimes happening to their businesses, residents who have encampments behind their homes. We're looking at everyone's objectives and trying to find solutions and work together collaboratively, and it is incredibly complex.
Dylan?
Right now, there seems to be kind of a debate going on between the concept of housing first, getting people who are unhoused into, you know, a permanent structure. It may not be their permanent home, but, you know, getting them off the streets, out of a, you know, a makeshift campground into some place where they can, you know, live, and setting up kind of sanctioned campsites where the folks who are reluctant for a wide variety of reasons to, you know, go into a shelter, to move into an apartment, can at least have a place that is, you know, stable, where they don't have to move around all the time. Is that really an either or choice?
You know, I've read a lot of the research that really tells us that having a safe place, housing first, is very critical. Just in order for a person to be able to get on their feet, find a job. It's really interesting. I'm going to divert for a second. When we did homeless outreach the last time I went out, we were at 100 Acre, and some of those campsites looked like you were at Burning Man. I mean, I've never been to Burning Man, but I've seen videos. I mean, it was just really high tech. There were generators, there were solar panels. And, you know, we went out there to help provide services, but they said, well, everyone here is at work right now, so there's nobody here for you to hand out resources to. So they were at work. So that really rocked the way that I thought about things, because people just wanted a safe place to be, to go to work, to come home to, and without, you know, housing first model where they do have a place to come home to, it's really hard to get on your feet. So it's almost like this cycle that we're in. So, you know, to answer your point, Dylan, I think everything that I have read and studied and what has seemed to work for other jurisdictions is really making sure someone has a roof over their head if they so choose, a place to get rehabilitated with wraparound services as close to that individual as possible, in order to really get them on their feet and back out into the world.
In addition to, you know, having the city, county, whatever agency, you know, buy apartments, rent apartments for people, why not have areas that are, you know, intentionally set up? You can pitch your tent here. You can have your encampment here. There was a lawsuit just filed against the city trying to get you to, you know, preemptively not sweep these encampments out before the gem show. You know, that because some people don't like the appearance of that, and quite often cities go in and move people along so that tourists don't have to see homeless people.
And we're worried about that with the Super Bowl. I will come back to your question. I'm not diverting, but we are worried about that with the Super Bowl happening in Phoenix, that we see that, right? We see other jurisdictions putting people on buses and sending them on to Tucson because they don't want the optics during important times
Now,
like
now
that.
Now Tucson's facing a lawsuit about that. That was just filed this
week. Right. Yes. Yes, I am aware. And so I think, you know, our housing teams are looking at a variety of strategies. Obviously, housing first and stable housing is number one. But we also allocated several million dollars. I think it's like 3.5 or 3.7 to look at different properties to increase shelter bed capacity, because that's a critical issue, especially with it being so cold out. I mean, we want people to be safe out there. And so I know that, like, we are looking at so many different options and how we move the needle in so many directions.
It may not be correct. Sorry, Bill. One quick thing.
You know,
it may not be correct, but the numbers that were included in that lawsuit that was filed said there are something like 850 shelter beds throughout Tucson in the community, and something like 3,000 or so folks who do not have any place to go.
Yeah.
Does that seem accurate?
I know that the homeless count is happening next week. We actually have someone from my office who's been trained up to go out there and do that. And I wanted to be able to go as well, but I just can't make it. But that'll be good to get a real count of how many people we're facing.
It's been a few years in-person homeless count has happened.
Yes. So I'm really looking forward to that data so that we can more precisely understand the demand that we have and we can build capacity accordingly.
All right, let's talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, something everybody can agree on. You love bakery goods, Dylan. I know that.
Indeed. And although, right now, I don't know. I mean, a Kringle is always good, but I'm kind of hungry. I think I need a sandwich.
Yeah, well, they could take care of that very easily for you. They are open for not only breakfast, but lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery, Swan and Sunrise, a suggestion for you for your sandwich that chicken that they do, the chicken sandwich, is just so good on the rustic bread. Nikki, you love bakery goods.
Well, yes, I do. A little bit too much.
What would you go for right now if you were at Mona's? And would you go the pastry route? And what are you thinking about, perhaps a croissant?
I'm a sucker for any baked goods, but I really do love chocolate. So if it's anything that has chocolate, yes, I'm done.
Steve and the team use that real dark chocolate, that baker's chocolate, for their filling for the croissant. Oh, Nikki's
Why is
gone.
He doing this to us, Dylan?
And other side of the glass, Tom just gave a thumbs up. He would go
he's
for the chocolate croissant. Yeah, he's always ready. All right, monasdanishbakery.com is their website. And again, they're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Councilwoman Nikki Lee and Dylan Smith after we take a quick break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our Friday Focus interview. Today it is with Tucson City Councilwoman Nikki Lee. With me in studio, also Dylan Smith. Dylan from TucsonSentinel.com, where he is the editor and the publisher. He is also the president of the Arizona Press Club. He's the immediate past chair of LION, the acronym LION Publishers. Local independent online publishers.
Indeed.
News publishers. Okay. All right.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. So we've talked about, we touched on water, we touched on homelessness. Now, of course, the law enforcement piece, trying to get enough cops on the street. I know Chief Kazmar is looking at creative solutions like maybe putting people that are not like sworn officers, other kind of community service type people out to supplement what the officers do.
Yeah, you know, we've attempted and we've taken some significant steps to really address recruitment and really retention of our current officers. We're in a situation like a lot of other jurisdictions where we have a lot of people who are eligible to retire. It's really just a choice for them to continue to stay on. We have between police and fire fewer people even applying to our academies, which is a challenge, and we see that across the board. It is not the easiest time to be in public safety for a lot of reasons. The military is seeing it. The Army didn't hit the recruitment numbers. So we as a society have some challenges around us in terms of finding people who are fit and ready to take these positions on. So there is a lot of work to do there. We are definitely, we've allocated and appropriated enough funding to hire the number of officers we need, but getting them to get through the door and get through training has definitely been a challenge.
First responders, just there, you mentioned the Army. It's just it's a very uphill battle getting enough first responders.
It is. And I have the pleasure of doing executive and leadership coaching with junior Army officers. And I hear over and over and over again, the challenge with culture, with a younger generation, it's just different. I mean, every organization deals with this with multi-generations in their organization, but it's really been a challenge to find younger people who are positioned to take those type of roles. So we're seeing this across the board.
The Navy, just in the past few weeks, I think, raised their high end of the recruitment age. You can be going to the Navy at 41 years old now.
Really?
If you want to.
So you're saying there's hope for me, Dylan?
You can go sign up again.
Amazing.
But yeah, they've had that, you know, that sort of recruiting challenge. And, getting folks, when you're talking about recruiting somebody to be a police officer, you want to have the right person. You don't want to just hire anyone for that job, as we've certainly seen over the past several years, finding people who approach very stressful situations in the right way is important.
We're really at kind of a tipping point, aren't we, with recruitment, not only of law enforcement, but look at any business. The help wanted sign is out, especially at the city of Tucson.
It's definitely a challenge. And one of the things that I've been talking about publicly at council meetings and with the city manager very closely is we have demand on our system and our services, and we need to be able to meet that demand. And we have a finite number of folks who can do this work, right? And so what are the essential things that we have to do per the charter and per our commitment to the public? What are the nice to have things that are secondary to that in terms of priority? And how do we really clearly define the difference between those two and put work into the pipeline of our teams that is truly essential and allow them to focus on that? Because sometimes with so much coming in on all of our plates, it's hard to get the focus that we need to move the needle in any one direction. So we have our retreat coming up in February, our mayor and council budget retreat, to really focus on what are our big rocks, what are our big priorities for 2023. So I'm really looking forward to that, to getting that clarity and getting aligned as mayor and council.
You're on your way after this interview over to the 911 center, and there have been major changes over there. New leadership, right, at the top. And how's that going?
Yes. We had the pleasure of appointing Sharon to the role of
Sharon
director.
Sharon McDonough?
Yes.
Yeah, who's been with the city a long time in various capacities, but this seems to be her role now and really has settled into this.
She has. And, she's just such an amazing leader. She's so authentic. She really cares about her people, and you can feel that. And she has obviously all of the experience supporting fire in the past, but she's really leading from a place of understanding what the folks who work in there need. I ran into a gal at the dentist office, the pediatric dentist office, the other day, and she had her 911 communication shirt on. So I started talking to her while both of our kids were getting their teeth cleaned there. And I was just asking her, what is your experience like? And she had previously worked for the department and then left because the culture was not very healthy for her. They've been able to get several people to come back, like decades more of experience that has returned back to the organization. She said even just getting a shift off or time off to be able to take her kid to an appointment has been so much easier because they're focused now on the individuals that work in there.
And so, when the call comes in now, I believe it is sent over to police or fire, and there's also a mental health number that people can call.
Yes, we're really trying to implement a lot of process improvements as well as AI to help us understand the types of calls that we're seeing and
the artificial intelligence.
Yes, okay. I'm very excited and geeking out about what that's going to tell us. But really just to get the right call to the right people who can respond, including if there's a mental health crisis and we need to dispatch different types of resources. So we worked on that. It's been a couple of years with the community safety program. Now it's community health and wellness and safety. But those are key things just to make sure that we were responding to the public in a way that they need to be responded to.
Because not every call that used to get cops showing up knocking on someone's door really needs a police officer handling it.
Absolutely.
Dylan, I've kind of got a stack of stuff. I know you've got, what else do you got on your plate?
I'm wondering, you were talking about your budget retreat and having some clarity about moving forward. One of the looming dark clouds is what is happening in the federal government right now with the debt limit. There's a distinct possibility that the federal government will shut down, which means a whole lot of money that flows to local governments, including the city of Tucson, will stop moving. Mm. What is the contingency plan if these funds dry up?
That is a wonderful question and a very real possibility given how exciting it was to watch the Speaker of the House process 15 rounds just to figure out who was going to lead the House.
Oh boy.
So I can just imagine the dysfunction and the lack of progress that we're going to see out of the House. So that does make us really concerned. I actually have not touch base with the city manager on that specific issue to know what is our backup plan. I know we've really focused on building up reserves and being very responsible in building our rainy day fund, and we may have to dip into it.
Because some of those, you know, American Rescue Plan funds, ARPA funds that you're counting on for special projects, some of these things might be significantly delayed.
That is a very real possibility that we need to understand our backup plan for.
When you get on a bus in this community, there is no charge, and I know that's going to continue for a few months, and this is a contentious issue in our community, whether people should pay something, even a little bit. What's your take on that?
It is a contentious issue. I can absolutely see the pros and cons very clearly of implementing a system that doesn't require any payment at the time of service. I know what we've given direction for our city manager to do is to talk to the U of A and other community partners on how they can contribute to the system. I think there's a lot of opportunity wrapped up in it when we think about how TUSD can use the buses and how can we put fewer buses on the road that are emitting greenhouse gases. I think there's a lot of opportunity if we can work this well to collapse some of those things into a system that really addresses a lot. So on the other side, we always have people show up to mayor and council and talk about some of the consequences of having a system where, you know, there are issues on the buses that they're experiencing that aren't the best. So I think it's just multi-layered, like everything. How do we take care of the root cause of people who are experiencing homelessness, who are finding warmth or cooling on the buses? How do we address that as part of the overall solution to our transit?
Dylan, before we wrap it up.
For context on that, before the city moved to having free buses, what is called fare box recovery, what people actually pay to ride the bus, was something like only 15% of the total budget for SunTran. Is that correct?
I don't know the exact percentage, but I know we're looking at about, I think, $9 to $10 million a year out of the general fund if we were to maintain not collecting fares.
All right. What are we missing, Dylan?
Well, we're in another election year.
Yep. And I think you announced on our program the last time that you are going to seek re-election.
Yeah, Bill pulled it right out of me up front.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I hadn't even,
I asked you, yes, are you going to be standing for re-election? And you said yes.
Yes.
When is your term up? Is it like 2 more years or what?
It is this year. It would be December.
Year.
So
yeah.
We
okay.
are in an election year.
So my question is about redistricting. Your ward will be somewhat different than it has been. And how does that, tell us what that change is, the redistricting change.
Yeah, for us in Ward 4, it wasn't significant geographically. I think we had a little bit of slicing of precincts. The thing that was important to us, though, is we have a big chunk of state land that lives inside the boundaries of Ward 4, and we have a lot of potential and a lot of work that we've been doing with state land department. So we really wanted to make sure that we were able to continue that work. So that is looking good. That chunk of land, it's empty. There's more cows there than there are people, probably, like my hometown. But yeah.
So you have the ward where there could actually be significant growth inside the city of Tucson without any annexations.
Potentially, yes. And there's a corridor that they're working on building that connects I-10 down to I-19 mm-hmm. past without going through the city and the congestion. So that's something that we made recommendations for in the past, and that's going to be taking off in the near future. So lots of opportunity for growth there.
Okay, Ward 4, Democrat Nikki Lee has been our guest. Thank you, Nikki. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Dylan.
And good to see you.
Hope
you
the
too.
New year is off to a pretty good start for you.
Yeah, it
All
has
right.
been.
All right, we'll take a break right here. I've got some things to talk with Dylan Smith about after the break. Stay
That's
with
ominous.
Us. I know.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bbtravel.com for more information.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to the Ward 4 Tucson City Councilwoman, Nikki Lee, and our thanks to Dylan Smith for joining me in studio. Dylan, the editor and publisher of TucsonSentinel.com, now in their 14th year. And Dylan is, well, he's been very active in helping kind of other online publishers get going as part of Lion Publishers, which is a group of, I think you've got now 450 online publishers in North America, right? Or is that some around the world, right?
Some in Canada as well.
I know you've traveled to Norway to even talk to people.
Yeah, I went a few years ago to go, you know, spread the gospel of rebuilding the local news biz to some folks in above the Arctic Circle in Norway, which was an interesting experience. I should say, real quick, before we dig into the news of the week, something we were talking about during the break with Councilwoman Nikki Lee, and I didn't get a chance to bring it up, but because you brought up the 911 communication services changes and everything, a couple months ago I had the I guess, misfortune to have to avail myself of the City of Tucson's emergency services and the, you know, efficiency with which 911 and Tucson firefighters do their business is very, very impressive, and I'm very, very thankful for it.
Do you have any idea what the response time was in your particular case?
I still don't have the records from the fire department, which I want to get just because I'm a journalist and I like to look at documents. There were firefighters at my house, getting me out of my house within maybe 5 minutes, less than 10 minutes. And then they had me at the hospital, you know, transported across town 10 minutes later. Mm-hmm. It was really fine work.
You know, and we were going to talk about a couple of the news stories of the week, but I'm very interested about the growth in online publishing, if we could for a moment talk about that. And I think I said earlier in the show that we've seen wherever you go in cities, the growth area are the online publishers, and the traditional print newspaper is on the downward cycle. Is that trend just accelerating or what?
Yeah, pretty much. You know,
I mean, have
Wyand
some
Publishers,
of the traditional
the organization I helped found.
Yeah, are some of the traditional stabilizing? Maybe
they are. So many daily and weekly print newspapers, there are exceptions, but the vast majority of them are run by large chains that are controlled by hedge funds and major institutional investors, and their sole purpose is to earn profits now. And they're not very concerned about investing for the future. They're not trying to build businesses. They're just trying to, whatever they can get out now to maintain the stock price, to make sure that things are profitable right now. Some of them are, you know, certainly not as profitable as they used to be by far, which is why you see them being cut and cut and cut and cut over the last dozen years. It's been, you know, like that all over the country. It doesn't matter what community you go to. Daily newspapers, weeklies, just ain't what they used to be, unfortunately. So we've seen new, entrepreneurs go into business, some nonprofits like we are at the Tucson Sentinel, some for-profits around the country, folks who are trying to fix things, to rebuild in a way with local ownership seems to be key. You know, a direct interest in not just building a good news business that can do good reporting, but being invested in the success of the community that you serve. You know, we're here to make Tucson the best place to live as it can be. That's our job.
And the model for fundraising is very similar to PBS, non-profit.
In a way, we don't get a whole lot of foundation money from outside Tucson.
So you depend.
Most of our support comes from people here, local readers, local small businesses who
make a donation.
So we see the value in what we do and understand that having, you know, an independent watchdog and people who, you know, live here, understand this community and really want to help, you know, share the fascinating stories that happen. You know, sometimes there are good stories about interesting people doing creative things. Sometimes they're not so good stories about people trying to get away with things that we catch them in.
So as we look at this news year, we talked a little bit about, alluded to the fact water is going to be the big issue.
It really has been, you know, looming for quite some time.
Yeah,
on this show.
Decades.
We spent years on this show pushing
yes.
city officials, Tucson Water, others to, you know, kind of fess up that this is going to be a problem, and they've kind of downplayed it. I understand that. You know, it's not Councilwoman Nikki Lee was saying, it's not a moment for panic.
Well, there
but
is
we need
still
to
some of
tackle
that.
The challenge.
And Dylan, there is still some of that, as you know, because when we talk to officials about water, they will say we're in a lot better shape than other cities in Tucson, which is Arizona.
That may be the case.
That may be the case. But and they say, well, we've got in a worst case scenario, 5 years.
Yeah.
But the long-term sustainability looks like a cloudy picture.
And if those cities, if those communities, you know, if all the everything in the Phoenix metro, if they don't change their ways in a substantial way, we're not out of that picture. They're in front of us in the water line, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the CAP canal flows through there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're at the end of it.
Then there's this issue of homelessness. We have a lawmaker, couple of them actually, have introduced bills making homelessness a crime. One lawmaker said he's tired of driving in the Phoenix area and seeing homeless people and making it a crime. So
how does that give somebody a house? How does that give someone a place to live?
I don't know.
First off, courts have very clearly laid down that a law like that is just unconstitutional. That's just, you know, legislative performance art.
Which we'll see a lot of.
Well, I mean,
that
just happens, but it's certainly not going to go anywhere when the Republicans have such a narrow edge in both houses in the legislature, a single seat, and then a Democratic governor who will just, you know, in the unlikelihood that would pass the legislature even, that's just an automatic veto.
Then we have lawmakers who turn their back on Governor Hobbs or walk out. I was talking to Andres Cano, who's the House of Representatives minority leader, the Democratic leader. And I didn't really have a handle on how many actually left or turned their back. And he said it was like half of the Republican caucus walked out. Do not recognize the governor as the governor.
Well, I don't know that all of them don't recognize the governor as the governor. Certainly there are some who buy into the election denialism. There are others who are, again, you know, so much of politics is putting on a performance, right?
Yep.
And, you know, making sure that your base sees you, you know, doing things in a dramatic way that they think are, you know, back up their ideas. It was like that. You know, we've seen, you know, certainly this there were a whole lot more members of the Republican Party doing that for than we have seen, you know, Democrats be demonstrative in such situations.
All right.
But it's not like it never happens.
Dylan, thank you very much for all your support over the years. We'll be calling upon you to do some vacation relief,
hosting
the show, and good luck. And how can people find out more about TucsonSentinel.com? Somebody may be saying, what's TucsonSentinel.com? I'd like to check it out.
Well, just fire up your web browser or your phone, go to TucsonSentinel.com. If you want to support us, you can become a member of the Watchdog Club and go to TucsonSentinel.com/watchdog and keep us around, keep us growing, keep us digging into that desert dirt.
And there's no minimum that what folks could give. I mean...
Oh, you know, we are very
all contributions
grateful.
Are welcome. How's that?
Very grateful for everybody who supports us. If what people can afford is giving us $5 a month, that is, you know, ever so much appreciated. If people give us $50 or $100 a month, you know, we need everybody backing up this project.
Dylan Smith, always a pleasure. Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
All right, we will take our break right here. We have our weekend watch. Matt Russell is off today. We have Dan Gibson, who will do a great job telling us what's coming up for the weekend right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
And away we go. It's time to stir it up on Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. So many outdoor activities and a lot of indoor activities as well, like visiting the Western New Mexico University Museum, where they have the finest collection of Mimbres pottery in the world. The website to get you going and start planning, southwestnewmexico.org, on what to do, where to stay, even where to eat. Some great places to dine as well in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Time for Weekend Watch. Our longtime host, Matt Russell, off this week. It's always a pleasure. It's been a while. To welcome Dan Gibson back to the show. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm great. I mean, Matt, you know, good on him putting in the work. There was a little bit of a stretch there where I thought I was going to have to wrestle. We can watch away from him, but he's doing fine. I approve of the work he's doing in this segment, but I am still happy to fill it.
I'd love to hear what you've got on your agenda for this weekend, some suggestions for the Buckmaster Show listeners.
Absolutely. You know what? I'm a little crazy about burgers right now. I mean, it's, you know, my New Year's resolutions have gone far out the window at this point. So, you know, I'm just going to eat a bunch of burgers. Daniel Scordato's new restaurant, Uptown Burger, if you're a longtime Tucsonan, obviously know the Scordato name. It's at incredible places, including Bocce, which is still serving high-end cuisine up in the foothills. He has a new place at 6370 North Campbell. Then they got some salads. They got a Nashville hot chicken sandwich that looks pretty good. But six pretty darn good-looking burgers, including an Impossible Patty one for vegans. Plus, they've got sweet potato fries, regular fries. You know, what more could you ask for from a place but a really excellent burger? I think I'm just going to see next 5 weeks. I'm going to work my way through one at a time. You know, this seems like a good plan for me.
Well, I join you in the enthusiasm for burgers. I'm a little. Can you kind of? Where is this place on Campbell, roughly?
6370, so that should be, that's River and Campbell, I believe. Yeah,
oh.
I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm currently at Barrio Charo. I'll just start walking up there while we're doing this segment. Let me
okay.
see if I'll get there.
All right. We get the general, in the general vicinity.
It's somewhere up there. Yeah, Google map it. It'll be great. You know, it's a little bit of an adventure for the listeners.
And what's
also,
it?
Also, speaking of burgers,
what's
Blue
it called?
Front on Congress is just open. Oh, it's called Uptown Burger.
Uptown Burger. Okay, go ahead.
Uptown Burger. Yes, Blue Front on Congress. It's in the former 1055 space, right there on Congress, next to what used to be the grill and the Red Room. Can't miss it. Right there in the heart of everything. They are opening another place that also has burgers. So it's burger time in the city. That's owned by Patricia Schwabe, who owns Penka, as well as Thule's Cafe and a number of the properties down there. They have a lentil tempeh burger, which I think, you know, might mix it up a little bit. Like maybe I can convince myself this is some healthy choices. But they also have shakes and a meatloaf. Let's be real. I'm going to end up having the meatloaf anyway. But I will tell people that I had the lentil tempeh burger. So it works out. Also, really inventive cocktail menus. Pretty excited about that as well.
I can take a third one real quickly.
Well, you know, we're wrapping up the festival. My suggestion tonight, free, it's on the Hotel Congress patio, Tall, Tall Trees. It is a one-man banjo act. The guy went to Juilliard, plays like this weird, like, chronic banjo thing. Great show, absolutely free, 5 p.m. Hotel Congress. And also plenty of stuff still to see this last weekend of the Jazz Festival.
And it's a banjo show?
Yeah, Tall, Tall Trees. Single, one-man banjo show.
Okay.
If you liked Bela Fleck or, you know, things like that, the sort of progressive fusion bluegrass stuff.
Very cool.
Crowd pleaser. Really good show.
All right. Hey, Dan, great to talk with you. Great. Hope the new year is off to a good start for you.
So far, so good. Better that I got to talk to you.
Thank you very much, Dan Gibson. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music by our friend Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt and everybody who helps put the Buckmaster Show on, including my longtime engineer and producer on Fridays, Tom Fairbanks. Everybody here at Bustos Media Tucson, be well, everybody. Stay safe. And I hope everyone has a lovely weekend.